Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Chris Wilson, I'm again joined by my good friend Stephen Talbert. Stephen, we're closing in on pitchers and catchers report, and how ready are you for baseball to be back?
Man, I am so incredibly ready. I was watching NFL playoffs last weekend, and just thinking, like, as exciting as this is, my mind is already to baseball. It's already to spring training and, you know, all the storylines that we're going to get to follow. And then opening day is maybe my favorite day of the year. And I just, you know, baseball has just always been my first love. So I can't wait for the season to start. And obviously we've got stuff to talk about between now and then. But yeah, man, I'm ready.
Yeah, and I mean, we're in this weird period where there's just not much news. We do have a few things to talk about here. You know, it's not really on the field stuff, but you know, it is important, and we want to touch on some of it. But I think the biggest story was actually Dana Brown leaving for the Astros. Dana was the vice president of scouting for the Braves, had been there for 4 years, I believe, had led four drafts dating back to 2019. He's leaving to be the general manager of the Astros. We knew he'd been rumored, I think, for the Tigers job, been mentioned in a couple of places. But, you know, I think he's worthy. You know, we're happy for him. Obviously, it's a blow to the Braves. I thought it was interesting, though, that it came out right after that that they're not planning on to announce a replacement until after the season. That makes me think that the replacement's probably going to come from within, or they're at least going to see how it goes. And then, you know, they may add somebody at the end of the season after that. But, you know, what do you think about Brown going to the Astros? I didn't think he was probably a front runner when all the names kind of came out to start with. But I mean, the longer he stayed in there, you know, it seemed like he had a chance.
Yeah. I mean, it was reported on for so long that by the time it actually happened, it wasn't really that big of a shock. I did think once David Stearns entered as a candidate, I thought he would probably be the favorite, just because I think he came from Houston. I think he was a Houston product before he went to Milwaukee, and then obviously he had a really good run with Milwaukee. So I was expecting him to get the job. But yeah, Dana was, I mean, he was listed from the minute that job opened as a possible candidate. So it wasn't that surprising, and obviously good for him. You know, he's been the Braves director of scouting for four years. Mm-hmm. So good for him. You know, it's a big deal. I tweeted out that it's got to be really weird to take over a job where the best you can hope for is to just match what the last guy did right before he got fired. And that's kind of what Dana Brown has to do, because, you know, the last guy won a World Series and then got fired a week later. So, you know, it's a tough job. You know, they obviously have extremely high expectations. Normally when you take over a franchise, it's because they're in a rough state and, you know, you've got some building to do. But, you know, the Astros are obviously the defending champs and have been in the World Series the last 2 years and, you know, probably the best team in baseball, or at least one of the best teams in baseball. So, you know, the expectations are going to be high, and but good for him. I was happy for him, and it was interesting to me that the Braves weren't going to hire a replacement, especially since there is a, you know, the draft. Obviously baseball is unique in the fact that their draft happens in the middle of their season, and the fact that the Braves aren't going to have a director of scouting. I mean, somebody will do the job, you know, in terms of actual day to day, but the Braves aren't going to have somebody with the title of director of scouting for an entire draft. And that's, you know, that's obviously a big deal. So, but Alex obviously does, it feels comfortable doing it. So yeah, we'll see what direction they go.
Yeah. Getting back to the Astros thing, you know, I mean, you hope that Brown's walking into a great situation. It seems like a great situation, but you alluded to they fired James Click after the season. Well, not really fired. They offered him a low ball deal after the World Series, and you know, they knew he was going to decline. And then they didn't hire. They spent the whole offseason and made moves, but didn't hire a GM. So, you know, it's a strange situation there with the owner. Obviously, you know, he's had egg on his face before because of the sign stealing stuff and everything. And, you know, it sounded like they were getting a lot of, he's getting a lot of input from guys like Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson, which is a combination that I'll be honest, I never would have thought I'd ever put those two in the same sentence, you know, for baseball direction of running a franchise. But, you know, happy for Dana Brown. That is a great job on the surface. You know, you hopefully that they'll let him do his job and go on. But, you know, I was looking at just kind of his legacy here with Atlanta. You know, of course, he replaced Brian Bridges, who was a very popular name from the rebuild era. You know, Brown's first-round picks, 2019 Shea Langeliers, Braden Shoemake, 2020 Jared Schuster, 2021 Ryan Cusick, and 2022 Owen Murphy. And then, you know, but you've got to look at the draft as a whole. And, you know, just in those four drafts, you've got Michael Harris, Vaughn Grissom, Spencer Strider, and Bryce Elder, who've all made it to the majors. And, of course, Harris, Grissom, and Strider played a huge part in that 101 win team last season. So, you know, pretty impressive. And, you know, from that standpoint, it's not surprising, I guess, that Brown's name, you know, it started coming up in GM searches.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a relatively quick turnaround too. I mean, Harris and Grissom were 2019 draftees, Strider and Elder were obviously 2020. And in the 2022 season, they were pretty much all major contributors in some way or another. So, and you're right about the draft. You know, the way the bonus pool works and the way under slot, over slot, all that stuff works. You can't just look at first round picks. You got to look at the whole draft, because a lot of times you get almost as good a player in the second or third round, depending on how you use your money. So, but yeah, I mean, just getting Michael Harris, Spencer Strider, Vaughn Grissom alone, just those three alone in the last, you know, three drafts, you know, pretty much cements Brown's legacy as being a good drafter. I mean, you can go your whole career and not draft guys that put up a 4 or 5 win season in the majors, and he's got two of them already. So, and we haven't really even seen what Vaughn Grissom's going to do yet. So, yeah, he was really good at the job. I know people didn't like the fact that Brian Bridges was kind of replaced, because he was extremely popular being here during the rebuild. But Alex was always going to bring in his own guys at some point. You know, he was only going to allow the organization to run kind of with the guys that were here before him for so long before he brought in his own people. So, and he'll do the same here. I mean, he'll get a chance to hire somebody else. He's extremely well connected throughout the league. He's been in baseball for a long time, so he knows all the major players, and I guarantee you he's already got a couple names. It's just kind of a rough time of year to be hiring such a major role on the team, so I'm sure that's why they're waiting. But yeah, good for Brown. It was a good legacy. You know, those three guys alone make it a pretty strong legacy in terms of what he did for the Braves, and I hope, you know, nothing but the best in Houston.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
All right, another item of front office news is the Braves gave Brian Snicker a contract extension. I know Brad and Scott talked about this a lot, but I wanted you and I to touch on it. Basically, this extension added a year to his deal through 2025. I think that's going to take him close to age 70. I mean, you say what you want about Snit. You know, I don't think when he took over for Eddie Gonzalez, most people thought he was just going to be in place through the end of that season. And, you know, depending on if you believe what you read, the final years of Coppolella and John Hart, you know, the plan may have been to replace him, honestly. And to see him stick through it and win a World Series, you know, I know this was something Brad and them talked on. It seems like Snit almost gets to call his own shots here. He's going to manage for as long as he wants, you know. But, I mean, what do you think about Snit extension?
The most important thing for a manager is how well you manage 35, 40 different personalities over a 6-7 month season. That is the most important part of the job, is getting an entire clubhouse, an entire group of guys, a bunch of, you know, high level athletes, all have egos, all have money, you know, getting all of these guys to kind of row in the same direction for 6 or 7 months. And that's more than bullpen management, more than late game tactics or strategy. That is the most important thing, is that's why they're called managers. You know, they're not called head coaches. They're called managers because their number one job is to manage a clubhouse, to manage personalities. And from everything we've ever heard about Snit, he is one of the best in the league at just that, at being able to take a clubhouse, get rid of any nonsense that's happening throughout a season, be able to squash any kind of, I mean, these guys are around each other so much, more than their own families, that there's always going to be disagreements. There's going to be sour feelings. There's going to be bad games where you've got to be able to move on. You know, players are going to have bad stretches where you got to be able to, you know, not dwell on it and stay positive. And Snit just, he does all that stuff so incredibly well. And he has such respect from the team that it was kind of a no-brainer. And I agree with you. I think Brad said it on the main show, but it really does seem like Snit just kind of gets to call a shot here. You know, I don't know how long he's going to manage. I think you said he's probably going to be around, I think he's around 70 by the time this deal ends. My guess is he'll just keep getting extensions until he wants to hang him up. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he got some sort of advisor role in the front office whenever he did kind of want to step back. But he's a lifelong Brave. He's been in the organization for 40 plus years now. So, you know, they're not going to fire him, or, you know, barring some just crazy unforeseen circumstance where the Braves are terrible for a couple of years when they're not supposed to be, and you know, the manager's kind of the always one that gets the axe when that happens, but barring something like that, you know, he's pretty much going to get to call a shot here. So, and you know what, he deserves it. He's earned that. He's got a World Series, he's got 5 straight divisions, he's got a pennant. And like I said, the most important thing, I don't think he's a great tactical manager, and I don't think he's a great strategic manager, and I do think he's gotten better at some of that stuff. But all of that stuff pales in comparison to managing a clubhouse for 6-7 months and being able to do that successfully and keep everybody moving in the same direction. That's what he's great at. And that's why Alex is, you know, that's why he keeps getting this job year after year, is because Alex understands that. And Brian is one of the best in the sport at doing just that.
I mean, you're right. I mean, there's always some things that, you know, we'll watch a game and we'll think, yeah, you know, the bullpen management or something, but doing that job 162 games out of a season, you know, I think it's a thankless job. No manager's perfect. Granted, you wish there were some areas that they were a little better at. Maybe it was a little more open-minded. But I'll be honest, in my personal opinion, Snit's been more open-minded than I was expecting, honestly, you know, from the outset. And maybe, you know, that's a testament to him, because if he wasn't, you know, he probably wouldn't still be sitting in that chair, you know, on the bench and leading this team. So, but I also wanted to point out, I got to looking back on this, the last time Snit was extended was in 2020, and the Braves announced an extension for Alex Anthopoulos that day, and they promoted him to president of baseball operations. Obviously, there wasn't an announcement on Anthopoulos, and his contract reportedly runs through 2024. Sometimes these things don't get announced. I don't know why the Braves wouldn't announce one if they had reached a deal with Anthopoulos. I don't think there's any reason to read anything into that. Obviously, though, if we get to the end of the season and, you know, there's not been an extension, then, you know, it becomes a talking point, I think, at some point. I think you were the one that pointed out that Alex was, under contract through 2024. So, you know, what about that situation? Are you surprised that they haven't locked him up and extended him as well?
Yeah. Anthopoulos is he's the Max Fried of the front office at this point, right? He's through 2024, just kind of like Max's, and we're just kind of waiting on an extension. And obviously Anthopoulos can't, you know, negotiate this extension. He's going to, you know, his bosses are going to have to, this is really a Terry McGuirk kind of call to action for Anthopoulos. I'm sure he knows that he's got one of the best executives in all of baseball working for him. And so, you know, it's crucial to lock him up, but if you want to know the first thought that went through my head when I saw Snitker get extended was just that, like, you know, is Alex getting an extension at the same time, or is this going to be a separate deal? Like you said, last time Alex got an extension, he also got a promotion to president of baseball ops. And so, you know, there's not that many more promotions that you can get once you're the president. So, you know, what are they going to do? Does he want to stay? He's obviously not a Southern guy. He's a more of a Northern guy. He's a Canadian, and, you know, he's not from here, but everything I've ever read about him or heard him talk about, he loves Atlanta. He loves, you know, his kids being in Atlanta. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he signed, you know, another big extension with the Braves. I hope he does. I think he's been the best. I mean, he took the Braves out of a really embarrassing scandal. And, you know, when Coppy and Hart got fired and have created, you know, he's built one of the strongest franchises in the sport. And so, you know, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope he gets the extension. He deserves to be one of the highest paid president of baseball ops in baseball, if not the highest paid, because I think he does more with less. You know, he doesn't have the same payroll that LA or New York has, and he still builds a perennial contender every year and has built something that looks like it's going to last for a while. So I hope Alex gets the extension. If he doesn't want to be in Atlanta, then there's really not a lot you can do about that, but I haven't heard anything to that effect. So hopefully it's just it's just something that's in the works and it'll get done. And like you said, they don't always announce it, but you know, this front office, this regime typically does. They announce all this stuff. Usually they're pretty transparent about this stuff. So I'd be surprised if they locked him up and didn't announce it. So I'm guessing when it happens, or if it happens, we will hear about it. My hope is that it happens relatively soon.
I kind of feel the same way as I did. I just said about Snitker. I just feel like this is Alex's job as long as he wants it. And, you know, he's talked in numerous interviews now about how he's kind of injected his whole family into the Atlanta area. You know, like you mentioned, he's got kids, they're in school. It would be a bigger story than for him leaving than it would be for, you know, them locking him up for 3 or 4 more years. You know, it's one of those things. I feel like it'll get done. You know, there's probably a good reason why it hasn't, but I don't think there's not any panic unless we're, you know, I mean, obviously if we're sitting here this time next year about to start spring training and he's in the last year of his deal, then sure, it's going to be a talking point. But I thought that was interesting when I was looking back on Snitker's extension, you know, to see that I had forgotten that they extended Alex and Snitker both at the same time last time. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, I don't really think it's a story yet or anything, just something to kind of keep an eye on.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. super smart guy. My nemesis, because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Steven, we got so much TV stuff to talk about. I mean, it's been a wild off season for if you're a fan of Major League Baseball and trying to just figure out how to watch games. It's been such a wild off season. But obviously, the biggest news, this top story on the site last week, was Chip Carey's leaving Braves broadcast booth to take over as the play-by-play man in St. Louis. Obviously, that's a huge story. Carey's been with Atlanta for a long time. It's kind of the voice of the team in a lot of ways, along with probably Joe Simpson from that standpoint. Rumor is that Tom Hart is the favorite to replace him. Ben Ingram's been mentioned as an option. I think David O'Brien had yesterday that there was a couple other finalists in that group too. But it's kind of a weird time to be replacing a broadcaster. I know we put up a wish list kind of right after this news broke, but the reality was always going to be it was going to be hard to get some of those names just because it's so close to the start of spring training. It's so close to the start of a new season. But, you know, personally, I think I like Tom Hart from his time here. He's got a lot of experience calling a lot of sports. And as a play-by-play man, you know, I'll be happy if he's the choice. I think Ben Ingram would have been a great option as well, but it sounded a little bit like that, you know, he was more interested, more comfortable staying on the radio side. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. But, you know, what was your thoughts on Chip leaving and then Tom Hart possibly as a replacement?
Yeah, it was definitely shocking just because Chip has been the guy for 17 years, I think. I think he came in like 2005. My opinions on Chip have been, you know, well documented. I think he does big moments really well. I think he struggles times with the day-to-day stuff, but you know, Chip was a mainstay, and there's a lot of people that kind of only are old enough to remember Chip calling games, or, you know, if you're my age, you're old enough to remember obviously the Skip and Don and all those guys calling games. And you know, for my lifetime, there's always been a Carey in the broadcast booth, whether it was, you know, Skip or Chip. And so going into a season and finding out as late as we found out that, you know, Chip was moving on to St. Louis, it was shocking. Like it was big news. You know, you don't always think about the broadcasters being a big part of the story, but you know, when you're talking about a local guy, and baseball is a very regional sport, and we're going to get into a little bit more of that here in a minute, but you know, you kind of fall in love with your local broadcast, even if they're not your favorite. Like, you just get used to it. You get used to all the calls, you get used to the flow of it. You just get used to it. And I'm somebody that watches every game. I watch on the, you know, some people watch with the radio, some people watch, you know, the opposing team's broadcast. I don't do any of that. I watch on TV. I watch Braves broadcast. I'd have the sound on. So I spend more time with, you know, whoever's calling Braves games than I do most of my family. So, you know, it was a big deal, and I'm happy for Chip. Chip's getting to go home. He's from St. Louis, and I'm sure that was part of the calculus for him. And I'm sure that all of this Bally stuff that we're about to get into is another reason, but he's going home. That's kind of why he's leaving. But yeah, for the Braves, it's a big deal who they get. If they get Tom Hart, and I think he's one of the favorites right now, and probably the favorite, then that's a home run, as far as I'm concerned, especially this late in the calendar, because you're not going to be able to get somebody who's, you know, really well-established in baseball. They all have contracts, and, you know, it's just too late in the offseason to try to get somebody like that. But if you can get Tom Hart, and for people who don't know, I mean, Tom Hart's, his resume is widely available. He did Brave stuff back in, like, 2014 or something. Yeah, 2013, 2014, he was on Braves Live. He did some field reporting. But since then, he's been calling college football games, college basketball games, and college baseball games for ESPN. And he always calls the SEC network Saturday night game during football season. So his voice will be very familiar to anybody who has watched one of those games. He's called probably the last 4 or 5 years of those games. So I would be ecstatic if it was him. Him and Frank Gore together would be one of the best boosts in baseball, in my opinion. Frank Gore is another side of this equation that we haven't talked about, that, you know, we don't really know what he's going to do. He obviously, you know, doesn't call as many Braves games as I think some of us would like him to. But so what they do really on both sides of the booth is a story. But I'd be great. I would be ecstatic with Tom Hart. I think that would be a fantastic hire. I think Ben Ingram is more comfortable on radio. And I think Brad talked about this, but if you replace him, then you got to find somebody else for radio. So you're really, you know, you're just kind of creating one hole to fill another. So it makes more sense to leave him on radio, I think. I'm interested to see who the other candidates are, the other finalists are. But if it's Tom Hart, then the Braves fans should be ecstatic, because that would be a home run hire.
Yeah, I agree. And at this point, that's who I'm pulling for as well. As long, you know, like I said, I'd been happy with Ben Ingram. But again, then you've got to replace – you're basically replacing – you know, two spots, then trying to fill two spots there. So, you know, that'd be great. But, you know, another big side of this TV story is, you know, the news. I think Bloomberg actually broke it late last week, but the Diamond Sports Group, which was a subsidiary of Sinclair, is headed towards bankruptcy, it looks like. And, you know, according to that Bloomberg article, it's not a matter of if, it's more a matter of when. You know, let me put this disclaimer out there. I don't have a finance background. I read a lot before I wanted to come on the show and try to talk about this, because there's a lot of nuance. That was a leveraged when Sinclair purchased regional networks from Disney. It was the old Fox Sports networks. It was a leveraged buyout. So there's a lot of debt in there. And that's what's going to lead it towards the bankruptcy. There's been a lot of speculation online. Obviously, a lot of people didn't understand what this means. We're still going to have games on TV. That's the short end of it. Even if they file for bankruptcy, you know, the Braves games are still going to be on Bally Sports Southeast, or they're going to be on those regional networks, Southeast and South. It may not have the Bally's brand in anymore. The biggest part of this story is the bankruptcy could cause teams to have to renegotiate their broadcast deals. They may see delayed or even missed payments. So there's a lot of moving parts with this. You know, if you're interested in this, I saw two good articles this week on it. One's by Ben Clemens at Fangraphs, and the other was by Rob Maines at Baseball Prospectus. You know, I know you and I talked a little bit prior to this, when this news came out, about Chip obviously going from one Bally's regional network to another. And, you know, Maines kind of pointed that out in his article today. And it was basically, you know, even with Diamond teetering on the brink of bankruptcy, you know, Chip Carey's moving from Bally Sports South and Southeast to Bally Sports Midwest to call Cardinals games. That's not a move that a team makes if there's any question that your broadcast will be on the air, you know. So that should put that to rest. You're going to be able to watch this year. Now, what things look like beyond this season, that's where it gets interesting. You know, but what is your kind of your take on this whole bankruptcy thing and what it kind of means for the future of watching baseball?
I'm like you. I wanted to make sure I read and listened to people way smarter than me about all of this before I spoke about it, because it is complicated. And like you mentioned, especially the way that this Diamond Sports Group ended up purchasing, you know, the old Fox Sports networks is convoluted if you're not at least, you know, somewhat experienced in the financial aspect of it. But kind of the quick and dirty version of it is that teams sell the rights to their broadcasts to broadcast networks like Sinclair. Those networks then put on the production of the broadcast. They sell that channel to a cable company like Charter or pick your cable company. And then the cable company sells the whole package to the consumer, right? So that's kind of the chain. It goes from team to broadcast network to cable company to consumer. And that's the chain that has kind of existed, at least in baseball world, for the last, you know, however long. few decades or whatever since the Fox Sports brand was kind of first came out. And the problem is that the broadcast network like Sinclair, well, first they have to buy the company from Fox, which is what you were just talking about, how they used a lot of debt to buy the company from Fox. On top of that, then you have to pay the yearly fees to the teams for the broadcast rights. And one of the articles I saw said that Sinclair / Bally pays about $2 billion a year to all the teams that they cover for the broadcasting rights to broadcast those games. And then on top of all that, you have to pay for the actual production of your broadcast. You have to pay for cameras and producers and on-air talent and all the stuff that goes into actually putting on a game on television. You're footing the bill for all that. So you got the initial buying, you got the yearly broadcast rights that are a fortune, and then you got all the production cost. And that model is extremely difficult to make profit or to make profitable because you have so much money going out the door. And unless you're just making hand over foot money in terms of ad revenue during those games, then you're going to have a hard time making money. And that's kind of where they found themselves. And, you know, Sinclair famously at this point, you know, purchased these RSNs at probably the worst time in history. They were probably overpriced. And this was obviously right before the pandemic hit. And it was just a terrible, you could see it coming. You could see it being a disaster when it first happened. But even on top of that, they got some pretty rotten luck on top of it. So it really is just a kind of a cluster for the consumer, which is all we really care about at this point. I don't care which third party company comes in between baseball and the consumer. For the consumer, it's probably not going to look any different in 2023, whether it's Bally or somebody that comes in and kind of saves Bally for the year. You know, it's probably not going to change much, but after this year is where it gets really fascinating because any company can kind of look up and down and see the trouble in making this model work for them. You know, if Bally goes under or Sinclair goes under, you know, which network is going to come along and say, hey, that, you know, we can make that work. It's just such a tough model to make work. And so that's what I'm going to be interested to see. I would love for MLB to come up with some sort of, you know, direct to consumer model or one of these streaming services just to buy, like I would love YouTube just to buy out all of the broadcasting rights for all 30 teams and just put it all on YouTube TV. They could charge me basically whatever they want and I would pay it probably just to be able to watch all baseball games in market, out of market, doesn't matter. And that's what I'm hoping happens. I doubt that's what's going to happen, but we'll see. But it is a, you know, it is a convoluted mess. It's got a lot of different layers. It's going to have big ramifications more after this year than during this year. I think we're far enough down the line for the 2023 season where it's really not going to matter. But when you try to watch baseball in 2024, it's going to look, my guess is it's going to look a lot different than it did any year before that.
In this Rob Maines article, this was kind of a passage where he alluded to that. It's, you know, you said there's not going to be any changes in 2023. You know, the games will be on the air and they'll probably still be on the same channels. Starting in 2024, though, things are probably going to look different. You know, games will probably still be on cable, but there will almost certainly be new streaming options. If you've been a cord cutter the last few years, you know this has gotten harder and harder. The RSNs basically pulled themselves off of YouTube TV and Hulu and have left you, you know, searching. If you're a streamer, you know, and you don't have a cable package or a satellite package, you know, watching the Braves and the Hawks or you know, any of those teams that are serviced by those RSNs, it's become a challenge. You know, MLB TV, if you're in the Atlanta market, MLB TV is not a solution because of the blackout rules. You know, I think this is where, hopefully, you know, it's a big if, but hopefully we can, this bad situation can lead to something better. And, you know, it sounds like that the league's been kind of exploring this and everything, but I'm kind of like you. I don't think, you know, I don't see all the games going on YouTube TV or anything like that. But what I could see one day is you buying MLB.TV and you get all those games free of blackouts. And I would pay whatever for that, just like you said earlier. I mean, my opinion, I just want to be able to watch baseball. And yeah. and you and I last night, you know, the news came out, YouTube TV dropped MLB Network today as of February 1st. Now, maybe it comes back before opening day. Maybe it doesn't. You know, we were kind of, I think I kind of assumed when they dropped the RSNs, Bally Sports South and Southeast, that those would be back eventually, and it hasn't happened. So I don't think you can, I don't, in this industry and the way things are right now, I don't think you can guarantee that those are coming back. But you know, you and I were talking last night in Slack, and I'm trying to look for an alternative to YouTube TV. And you know, they're, every one of them has their, all the streaming services have their pros and their cons. And you know, at the end of the day, it really doesn't get you closer without paying a lot more money. I mean, I finally told you last night, you know, I'd probably just be as well off to just to go back to a cable package or a satellite package, and you know, throw up the white flag and surrender. You know, that's kind of the way it feels like. But at some point, the league's got to step in here and make this thing easier, you know, for fans to watch. Because, you know, I do this for a living. You know, if I'm not at the stadium, I need to watch these games, and you know, I love it. But you know, if an average fan, they're not going to jump through this many hoops to be able to watch their team. You know, I mean, it's hurting the bottom line in a lot of ways, and it's hurting, you know, I just feel like this is an opportunity for Major League Baseball. Maybe there's some legal ramifications to why what I want can't happen, but there's got to be a better solution than what we've been dealing with for the last, you know, 2 to 4 years now. That's just kind of my feeling. I mean, I just want to be able to watch baseball. And I don't want it to be complicated, and I don't want to have to subscribe to 5 different things to be able to see my team.
Yeah, and that's the problem for baseball is that, and this is not just a baseball thing, but most sports, the number of casual fans outnumber the number of hardcore fans probably 10 to 1, right? Your hardcore fans are going to find your games no matter where they are. They're you and me who... We research this stuff. We talk about this stuff every day. You and I are going to find a way to watch the Braves no matter what, because we're hardcore fans. But casual fans are where, you know, leagues make money or lose money, because there's just so many more casual fans. And if you're making your fans jump through 4 or 5 hoops to see your games, every hoop they have to jump through is another chunk of casual fans that are just not going to watch, like you just said. And, you know, I am very much, you know, if MLB TV came out with a package tomorrow that said, this is our outer market, you know, package. If you don't live in the area where your team plays and you don't, you know, you're fine just paying for outer market rate, then here's your outer market package. And if they said, and for double that money, here's your in market package, you know, for right now, the crazy thing about baseball is it is easier to watch the Braves if you don't live anywhere near Atlanta than it is to watch the Braves if you live somewhere close to Atlanta. Like, they make it easier. Like, I know Scott lives in Arizona, so for him, it's way easier to find options to watch the Braves, because he can just log on to MLB.tv and just watch the games on there. And that's not an option that's afforded to anybody that lives in market. And that's got to change. And if it's MLB just coming up with a separate package that includes in-market games, then do that. And you can honestly, I'm not joking, you could charge almost whatever you want, and I'm probably going to pay it. And now, obviously, the more affordable you make it, the more casual fans will pay for it. But, you know, asking fans to have to research all these streaming services and, you know, see which ones are carrying MLB Network, which ones aren't, which ones contracts are coming up, you know, is it going to change? Do I need to look at cable? Like, asking casual fans to do all that, they're just not going to watch, and they're just going to check out. And that's the last thing baseball needs. So either some sort of in-market package that, so people that actually live near the team that they watch can watch these games, some sort of streaming option where, you know, you get your money from YouTube and YouTube gets their money from consumers, whatever it is, but there needs to be a solution. You can't just keep doing this. And like you said, you know, this is a negative, but it, you know, hopefully it ends up being a net positive, because, you know, what we really need is this entire model to die and something else to be kind of born from it, because this whole model just sucks. And MLB blackout rules have been a thing that most fans, you know, if you ask baseball fans, what's the number one thing they would get rid of if they could, I think blackouts, the blackout rules would be number one by a massive margin. I mean, it's the most annoying part of being a baseball fan is the fact that you can live close to the team that you root for, and that means you can't watch that team on MLB.TV. That's what they got to get rid of. They got to figure out a way to get in-market fans more access to the teams they want to watch, because if not, then they're going to start losing fans in droves.
Yeah, and I mean, like you just mentioned, even if you go, if you do the gymnastics and try to come up with what you figure is the best plan, you know, whether that's YouTube TV, obviously that's not the case now, but if it was YouTube TV, some mixture of YouTube TV, MLB TV, and then, you know, something else, the fact is it could change tomorrow. You know, and I mean, yeah. you can have the right answer, and then 2 months from now, you know, there's more carriage disputes, and you know, and you're the one that suffers. That's the thing. You just can't. It's just not a workable model. And I mean, the blackout rules, like you said, they apply to other sports as well. They are the worst thing. It's an arcane thing that's existed for way too long. You know, it's time to come out of the dark ages, and you know, I just, like I said, I just want to be able to go. I've said this for years. I just want to be able to go to Major League Baseball and say, give me your games. I will pay you. Give me the games. I want to be able to watch. I want to be able to watch.
I will give you money. Right. You give me sports.
Yes, please take my money and let me watch what games I want to watch. You know, and you can chop that up into different levels. You know, the whole package, you know, your only NL teams only, your own team. I don't care how they split it up. But, you know, I would gladly pay extra, because I'm already paying extra trying to cover watching everything. So yeah. I don't know, you know, I feel like something's got to change, and this, you know, if this bankruptcy and things going down the tubes right here, if that doesn't spur positive action, then I'm not sure anything's going to. And you know, again, like I said, if you're interested in growing this sport and growing this game, you've got to get in front of as many people as you can. And, you know, I do feel like, I mean, they got that incentive to be striving for that goal, you know. So hopefully it comes up. You know, I don't, like I said, it's not going to change this year, but in future seasons, they've got to come up with some kind of option.
And the last thing I'll say about it is, like, MLB TV is actually fairly affordable. You know, it's like $120 a year, I think, or something like that. Maybe $150. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's not crazy when you consider it's for the whole year. You know, if they doubled that or tripled that, honestly, you know, if they said for $300 a year, you can watch any team, any game you want, I would pay it for $300 a year. I mean, what is that? Like, I mean, that's like $40 a month, or I don't even know what that is. I mean, it's, but that's, you know, that's way better than having to do all the stuff that you have to do to watch in-market games. And I understand the league and teams have gotten a ton of money. I mean, they get a ton of money from these TV rights. And that's why they do it this way, is because these networks will pay all this money. I mean, like I said, Bally owes $2 billion just for 2023, just for the broadcast rights. I mean, that's a ton of money. And that's why teams do it. That's why this model exists, is because teams realize how much they could sell these broadcast rights for. And then to make that money back, you know, obviously the networks have to charge a ton of money for the cable companies, and the cable companies in turn have to charge a ton of money to fans. And so that's why this network exists, or that's why this model exists. But hopefully with it crashing and burning the way it is, and it is crashing and burning, that's what this is. You know, hopefully from the wreckage of this model will come something much better.
It's important also to kind of mention is, you know, there's a chance that teams miss out on some of this money. Reading those two articles, especially the one by Ben Clemens today, you know, I don't think they're going to just completely not pay teams. Obviously, if they cancel the deal and they're trying to sell what's left of Diamond Sports after the bankruptcy, it's a whole lot more valuable if they have those contracts in place. But there is a chance that, you know, those payments come late, or they come reduced, or, you know, there's some renegotiation. And I'm sure that's going to have long-term effects as well. Thankfully, we're a long way from a CBA negotiation. But, you know, it would not be shocking to see some teams use that as a means of an excuse to not spend. You know, I mean, they don't need many excuses. We've seen this too many times. So, you know, just all kinds of things that go into this that's going to have long-lasting effects on it, and not all of them are going to be positive. But I'm just hopeful that league understands just how critical I think this situation is, and can come out of this with just a better option for its fan base. Because I'm like you. I mean, I'd easily pay double if I don't have to jump through all these hoops, you know. And yeah. I think there's a lot more fans out there that would be willing to do that if they didn't have to worry about blackouts and, you know, subscribing to so many services just to try to be able to see their team. It's a situation I'm sure we'll be talking about it again. You know, there's a lot of NBA teams and NHL teams also included into the Bally RSN. So, you know, there could be this could be a situation where it's not just affecting Major League Baseball. We may see some sort of a solution that comes, you know, from multiple leagues even. So I'm sure it's something we'll be going to be talking about throughout again before too long, because, you know, the way it reads, this bankruptcy's going to happen. And, you know, we'll have to just kind of figure out what the fallout is. But, you know, pitchers and catchers report a couple of weeks away. Baseball is going to be back by the end of the month. We're going to have games going on down in Florida and Arizona. So, you know, now's a good time. Stay tuned. We've got stuff on the site, trying to keep things flowing there. It's kind of a dead time, but there has been a little bit of news. So, you know, and as always, we just appreciate you guys listening.
Yep. We should be getting the Braves' new announcer here pretty soon. Bowman tweeted out yesterday or the day before that they're kind of finalizing that decision. So we should know who's going to be announcing games here probably this week. And then, you know, we'll get spring training rolling here in about 2 weeks. And then it's off to the races for about 7 months. And obviously anybody who's followed us any time now knows that once the season starts that, you know, we pretty much go nonstop. So make sure to check everything out. Check out the podcast network. You know, we've got this show, we've got Brad and Scott on the main show, and then we've got Sean doing the Daily Hammer. So there's always plenty of content, and obviously there's a ton of written stuff on the site. So check it all out, and we'll see you guys next week.